How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
My name is Lauren, and I'm a dental hygiene student at Fayetteville Technical Community College in North Carolina, graduating in May of 2018. And now, get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast.
These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Listeners, welcome back to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is Andrew.
This is Michelle.
This is episode 109.
And Michelle and her cough. Sorry, guys. That's going
to
happen.
And we're not going to take the time to edit that at all.
No, so because it's going to happen so much during this episode.
You know, I was thinking, it's kind of, I don't know, meta, if you want. I don't know what it is. It's a thing. We are today launching an episode of Voices of Dentistry. But we just got back from Chicago Midwinter, where we did another bunch of stuff, where we did an intro for our last episode at Chicago Midwinter for Voices of Dentistry. I don't know. Maybe no one followed that. That was very weird for me to think about, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, because we're sitting there at Midwinter, and we're like, hey, we got to do an intro for this episode. And we're like, hey, we're at Midwinter. And then it's like, the interview's like,
oh, hey, oh, we're at Voices of Dentistry. That's true. I guess I didn't think about that. Well, I hope that just goes to show everybody that we are traveling, trying to bring you the best interviews possible.
Amen. Yes, very, very much so. Well, how was Midwinter for you, though? I mean, here's the thing, listeners. What you guys don't understand is me, I have almost zero agenda going in except for do some podcasting. Michelle has all of everything to deal with while she is on the road. So how are you doing?
Well, you know what? It's just a struggle for me at these. We have made so many friends, and I'm actually, you know, it's fine. Like juggling the podcast and business and stuff and making sure that, you know, I'm keeping business stuff separate and podcasting separate. Like that's fine with me. I like being busy and it's a lot, but still I enjoy both sides of it. So it's just not a big deal. But what I don't enjoy is when I can't hang with everybody and I know they're all having fun without me, the FOMO sets in. So I think that's more of an issue for me than me trying to juggle the jobs, like the career stuff. It's like, man, y'all went and had like a great time at a comedy show. And I saw all of our friends at AOSH, at the AOSH reception. Yeah. And I had to leave. I didn't have to leave. I was actually excited to go to dinner with another group of friends. But I was just like, oh, man, everyone's here and y'all are having fun and we're all catching up. And it's, I don't know, that part gets to me. This year, though, I will say that I'm not as exhausted. So that, I don't know why, but that's good.
Well, because we only did like 5 episodes of our own show this time around instead of, I don't know, a dozen or whatever.
I personally was shorter a day on each side of it. Last year, I had a day extra on the front end and the back end.
Oh, okay. I didn't forget about that part. If you remember, though, also one of those days, it was like 8 a.m. We had an interview all the way until
nighttime when we did the round table and it's all day podcasting, everything. Do you want to do some shout outs for our friends that we saw?
Sure. Where do you want to start? There were so many.
I want to start.
I don't want to forget anybody.
You know who? Okay. This is just kind of cheesy or whatever, but I think my new best friend is Michelle, M.A. Michelle. And we gave a shout out to her a long time ago. Mm-hmm. We saw her at Voice of Dentistry, and I saw her at the AOSH thing, and she is just the happiest person in the whole world, and I just love being around her.
Because
her energy. Yeah, well, we're best friends, and you're not. So there's that.
I'm going to give you that because I know you need that to feel good about yourself.
I do need that. Please let me have it. Of course, April. April was there at the AOSH thing also, and she was like screaming her head off. That was really fun. I like going into – here's a little bit of inside behind the scenes for everyone. I love when people make me feel good about that. But we had Ben of Kara and Ben then making fun of those people – coming up and be like, oh my gosh, are you Andrew from A Tale of Two Hygienists? I'm like, Ben, you know who I am. Quit making me look like I'm someone famous in front of these people I just met. Like, he is so ridiculous. So, like, that side of things made me feel uncomfortable. But you know, it was really good to see them.
I hope forever and always the people, I don't think you and I will ever get to a point where we aren't the most self-deprecating people in the world. But if for some reason our heads get way too big, I hope that we continue to have the friends that are like, you guys are nothing. Just remember that.
Yes. Yes. You guys are nothings of this world.
Yeah.
And we do have plenty of those friends. So don't
yes, we
get
do.
Us wrong.
We do. And if for some reason you feel we are not, go ahead and make fun of us like that because I find it hilarious.
Yeah. I saw Cindy, Cindy Johnson, who was our last week's episode. I saw all of our friends on the exhibit floor that we know from, you know, the PDT, our new friends at Zerk, new friends at Premiere that we just made, and at Voice of Dentistry were there, and then also some new ones from this meeting. So that's really fun. And you know, Sarah was there, Emily Bogie was there. Ashley McCauley, and she has a new job that I don't know. We haven't really talked about much on the podcast, but congrats to Ashley and her new job. She sounds like she's loving it, except for the bitter cold. I think she has to move to Michigan, she was saying, and that's cold and gross. You know, Lisa Barr, all these people, Kara and Ben, who I see all the time, but not everyone gets to see. So they were there. So that's fun. Who else was there? Manager Mike, of course.
Manager Mike. And then one of my consultants is Jackie Dodish, and she is working with High Life and Angie Stone and Mary Jensen and all of our buddies that we just adore so much, you know, fighting the good fight for the geriatric aging population. And she is a part of High Life. So I love that she is motivated in doing that side of it. I think that's so cool. So, yeah,
it was good to see her, even if it was for a minute.
Yeah. Lots of people. I love the Midwinter show for that, but I just wish we had just more time with them. Like, you know, it's always in passing, and I just would love to spend more time. But
yeah.
What can you do? What can you do? Yeah,
we got some really good interviews, though, at the Midwinter Conference. This is probably, as a group, some of the most powerful interviews you guys are going to listen to for the next little bit. So you should be really excited about that. I think we did four or five of them, some really kind of – the one I'm thinking about specifically was Joanne Grenlian when she was talking about having to have a doctorate degree as a hygienist. And like she made so much sense about it. It was very an impressive like way of looking at things. So I can't wait for that episode to drop.
I want to launch hers on a Monday and like hashtag it Motivational Monday.
We should.
Because why it don't was we? Just, you know, when you get done with it, you feel like, yeah, I am a hygienist and I am more than just a tooth. Like, you know, you're like, no, yeah,
like,
yeah,
I am.
Step
that
up to
good.
Me. I am making changes in this world and I'm doing good for patient care. Like it was good.
Yeah.
So lots of good ones.
A fun thing. So we did go to the comedy club. It was not like a stand-up thing. It was an improvised Shakespeare is what it's called. If you guys are ever in Chicago, you should do that. It's on Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, I believe. really, really funny. We went with a smaller group. If anyone's ever been out and about with Emily Bogey, you will know what fun is with being around her. So as any improv, they ask what the theme should be for whatever they're going to be talking about. And Emily Bogey yelled out, oral pain. And so the whole entire thing was about oral pain. And they did such a fantastic job over there. It's a short one. It's only about an hour and a half long. But they did a great job improvising some stuff and speaking in Shakespearean speak. Yeah. So that was kind of cool. One last thing on my end. I made Mike try White Castle.
Gross.
Why? It was.
Why? Why?
I feel like this thing that we call life, I feel like people need to experience the good and the bad, right? You don't know what good is until you know what bad is.
Right.
You don't know how good your life is until, like, you lose everything and you go bankrupt.
So you were giving him perspective.
That's exactly what I was doing because I love my brother so much. I wanted to let him see how great his life is because he doesn't have to eat White Castle all the time. Woof. It's gross. So we only ordered, like, one each of – there's two different kinds. We split it in half. We barely even – luckily, they're sliders, so they're really small. We barely got it down, and we went around the corner to, like, Harold's Chicken or something like that. That was good. But, yeah, White Castle, woof.
Wow.
But we had fun. Yeah. Oh, and we went to a Marquette game with Matt. Yeah. How did he Matt? Sorry, Matt. I'm sorry. I feel like we talk about him a lot on the podcast. So he doesn't
Matt gets his podcast love.
He does. We went to the Marquette game, though, versus DePaul, and Mike and I brought the bad luck, and Marquette lost. So, sorry, everybody, but...
I had dinner with him, but I'm pretty sure he just ignored me the whole time. It's fine.
Purposefully?
Yeah.
He's like, fine, just stay away from me. I'm trying
he's
to be
like,
popular
over I'm, here. What I'm trying to do is not make any of these other people know that I associate myself with you.
That I don't slum it.
Yeah,
with
I'm
the
not.
Podcasters.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Holy moly. Well, before we get into our interview, I want to talk about something that came across our newsfeed today. About ethics. So Dr. Gordon Christensen wrote a paper that I'll probably put in the show notes where the paper was found.
So as a quick edit, when we went back to do some more research about that paper that came back with Gordon Christensen, I think it probably is fake. We're not really sure, but the URL at the very bottom leads to some erectile dysfunction webpage or something like that. So while we were probably duped, as were many other people, the point that we're trying to get across regarding ethics and what has gone on with our profession still hold true. So those may or may not be, though, the words of Dr. Christensen after all.
About all sorts of different aspects of dentistry. And when he started, the professionalism, he says, has gone down. So going from speakers to being just like paid puppets of whatever.
Yep.
I just like all aspects. And I kind of wanted to get your opinion. So you've been in dentistry for so much longer than me that I wanted to get like a professional opinion going from, you know, your private practice days to what you see now. Has the profession changed? Have people become less ethical?
You know, some of the things that he mentions in this paper is the speakers on the lecture circuit and magazines and articles that are being written. And, you know, I work for a company. I work for one of these, you know, companies that sponsors me as a speaker on these things. And, you know, I think that there is a good way to do it and a bad way to do it that doesn't test ethics, because on one side of it, in order for the attendee to not spend a lot of money, the corporate side of it picks up that. And so that, you know, right. So, and you know, some of you might not know this, but when you go to these exhibits like RDH Under One Roof, like you could have a much higher fee to attend that meeting, but people and companies like, you know, Tepe, PDT, Zurich, all these companies, they're paying a lot of money to be there so that it decreases the cost to you.
And we're talking about thousands of dollars for booth space, plus shipping, plus
dollars.
Sending the people over. I mean, it's a big investment on these companies' part to lower the cost for everyone else.
Right. So I don't think that if we got rid of corporate sponsorship of speakers and ads and magazines and things like that, it would hurt our profession because we wouldn't probably be attending these things as much or as frequently. But on the flip side, there is a line, you know, as a speaker, and you have to be give your disclosure. And there's unfortunately a lot of product whores out there. There's people that have I personally, and you and I do this with the podcast, like we only want to deal with people that we believe in and we are actually using as clinicians, and that matters a lot to us. That's not the same way that you find with other speakers. And sometimes you actually don't know who's paying them and who's not. And that's really unfortunate. And I do think that that ethical side of our profession has declined quite a bit because you don't know who's, are they telling me about this particular product because, you know, are they throwing up two slides because I paid them $500? You know, yeah. I don't know.
Well, is there a way to tell? I mean, do you have any tips to like, except for the very overt where they actually do the disclaimer and said, hey, you know, I'm paid by this big company, this big composite company. I mean, how else can you tell if they're, telling what their real heart
for
believes?
AGD guidelines, as far as like the PACE certification, you have to tell, like you have to, or you
yeah, but
can't
Gordon
get recertified.
Talks about, in this thing though, he talks about how people can get around it. He was mentioning that people will maybe pay the wife or they'll sponsor their kid to go through school or, you know, indirectly paying with it where you don't have to actually claim it on your taxes. He's like, there's all these things that are happening in dentistry, which I didn't even know that was even a thing.
I've heard about it, but I've never like witnessed it or found out about it. But God, like that's happened in our politics and, pharmaceutical companies and all of this. It's probably happening more than not. So I think honestly, it's our responsibility as clinicians to do our due diligence, look it up, follow it. You know, I learned something this week even about toothbrush bristles and what constitutes soft. There's no standardization of a soft bristled brush. So you can say three different companies are all soft, but it doesn't mean anything. It's just their version of soft. It comes into like bristle diameter and length and the conical versus tapered ends. And there's a lot of things that factor into a soft bristle brush. And so for us as clinicians, if you see recommendations out there, don't just be like, oh yeah, I learned about this soft toothbrush. You should go get that from CVS. Like go do your due diligence and test it, compare it, know what you're using, know what you're recommending. Look up the research. I think it's our responsibility to kind of put in some legwork, and it's unfortunate that we have to do that, but that's the time that, you know, the era that we're in. Also, what else did he talk about? He talked about, the speakers on the lecture circuit. Let's see where else. Articles and journals. Which I mean, talking about the peer-reviewed research in dentistry with a few exceptions, not guaranteed that a published paper has legitimate conclusions. In my opinion, this is Gordon Christian's opinion, peer review in dentistry is in need of major revision. And I actually listened to a really great podcast on Adam Ruins Everything, which is my new favorite podcast that I listened to. And it was talking about research and duplicating research, because sometimes you can say, yes, well, we did this research, but it's never duplicated again. There's no actual benefit to any company to redo it to confirm that they're going to still get the same results, right? And so what they were recommending is, instead of, let's say, I go for my doctorate and then in my dissertation, I am going to do this research, and if I'm going to try to get a positive result, a conclusion, or a hypothesis. Like I want to answer the hypothesis so somebody publishes me, right?
Right.
So that's when you start getting into this like p-hacking and running all these stats that really don't matter, because you're trying to find that conclusion that you want, because you know if you get that, you will get published. So instead of doing that, wouldn't it be better that I submit my idea for research with a guarantee that has been, you know, that goes through peer reviewed, like, yes, that is necessary for medicine and evidence-based dentistry or whatever it is. And then I know no matter what, I'm going to get published. So I can't change, like, who cares if I get this or that, because no matter what, I'm still getting published, versus me trying to create something in order to, you know, just because that's trendier or a little more sexy than the actual result. You know, does that make sense?
Right.
So I totally agree with him that, you know, there needs to be some revision of journals and peer reviewed so that there isn't that ethical, you know, conundrum for people that I think are super ethical. I mean, I can't imagine spending 2 years of my life researching something and it never get published just because I found the alternative, my null hypothesis or whatever. That's years of your life. Like, you know, so it's not that I'm like, these people are terrible people, but I kind of understand it. It puts them in this conundrum and this, you know, so maybe just say, yeah, that's a really great question. And I want to know the answer to it as science-based medicine and dentistry, and you'll get published. Don't worry about it.
Which would also kind of help with people that are going for tenure track that need to be published in order to get tenure track.
Yes.
It'll take all that stuff away and be a little bit more fair, but. Yeah. I mean, that's a whole thing. We could probably have a whole podcast on that, but holy crap.
But yeah, it was a good one. So I hope everybody looks at it. But I do think that there's some serious ethical things. There's a lot of elbow rubbing, like, I know this person, so I'm going to give it, you know, there's a lot of that. There's also a lot of this, like, if they, for instance, I know an author of a textbook. Mm-hmm. That is wrote an article on implant maintenance and is decades behind in the research. They're in their office clinically still using plastic scalers. You wrote an article in a textbook, and the elite thing, like, I feel like if you are that progressive person that's lecturing and writing articles and publishing books, you should be doing the top of the top, right? Which is glycine air polishing. Yeah. Like, let's just all, like, that's glycine air polishing or air flow or biofilm, because we're trying to move away from the polishing side of things because it's not polishing. It's biofilm management, right? If you're that person, like, and he writes a textbook, you read that textbook, he's kind of in your mind as, like, the guru, right? And they're saying, oh, it's fine, you can use stainless steel scalers, or it's fine, use plastic instruments. So I don't know. Yeah, I do. And now that I'm on this side of it, it's a little weird and a little different because I don't know. Yes. Yeah. I do think there's some changes in professionalism and ethics to answer your question in a really long way. Sorry.
As a quick teaser, also though, Dr. Gonzaga talks about, the whole plastic instrument thing, and he's like, why are people scaling implants? Anyways, that's an interview coming up too. Dr. Gonzaga had a great interview that you guys are gonna really love. I was seriously stoked about all of our interviews this
event. right
they're the best,
everything.
So
what I love though is that people are excited to be on the podcast, and it's such a difference than what we used to be like, so there's this thing called a podcast and this is how we're gonna record and these are the things that you
please,
and it's gonna be here.
Yeah.
That's so much has changed in 2 years.
It really has. I think that, you know, having 50 plus dental podcasts out there really does help. And, you know, having us been around for, you know, not since the beginning, but, you know, we were pretty early adopters, especially in the hygiene community. So I think that's really helped our cachet.
Yeah, whatever.
Reputation. Okay.
So, no, we need to move then on. We also have RDH Evolution that we also want to talk about.
Yes.
We did a promo with Emily Bogey too.
And that will actually probably air before this episode airs. So you guys have probably already heard it by now, because that'll probably go out today. But yeah, so RDH Evolution is a really cool thing that Michelle's going to be speaking at with Emily. As a reminder, it's April 5th through the 8th. Over in Rosemont, Illinois. Rosemont is, just for you that don't know, is just outside of the O'Hare Airport in Chicago. So it's not actually in like the Loop in downtown Chicago area. It's more towards the airport. So if you're flying in and out of O'Hare, you'll probably actually just get a shuttle bus from whatever hotel it's going to be at. And I think I have that somewhere. I'll put in the show notes what hotel it's going to be at. But because it's so close, and usually things over there are going to be a lot less expensive than kind of in the downtown area.
Yeah.
The Hilton Rosemont.
There you go.
And it's $130 a night is what it's going to be, as opposed to, I think we were paying almost $200 a night, depending on where we were staying in the Loop. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'll be good. It's all about kind of professionalism, kind of thinking outside the box. It's geared definitely more towards the professional, maybe less for like the new grads. Although if you're a really outstanding, amazing person, then you should probably do this as well too. But it's career development and more of that side of things.
Yeah, and yeah. Just really kind of helping you navigate and giving you the contacts that you need depending on where you're interested as far as your passion and where you want to move past it. And I think also it's not just about getting out of the op, but maybe also how do you enhance being in the op, find a new passion, or maybe it's not just scaling anymore in the op. Maybe there's something else out there like sleep medicine or Angie Stone's thing with High Life. And I don't know. It's just thinking outside of the box and helping us to progress as professionals.
Absolutely. So check that out. I'll put the website in the show notes, but it's rdhevolution.com. Pretty easy to remember. Special thanks to the people, the Chicago Dental Society, who on Chicago Midwinter. Thanks especially for Rachel and Dr. Bolden, who are our contacts for this, who get us into the event using a press badge so that we can bring you all this great content.
Yep.
They're really awesome people, and we love Dr. Bolden so much. She's a personal friend of mine. We're on credits together, and she's just a wonderful person. So thank you very much for that.
Cool.
This episode is Rachel Teal Wall. We talk about a lot of really amazing things. She is of Inspired Hygiene fame. You guys have probably heard of it. And we talk a lot about like motivators. We talk about systems. We do talk about profitability.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the cool things that I found in this episode was that in the long list of things that she kind of tells about what they try and do with a practice, profitability was the last thing that she mentioned. It's not to mean that profitability isn't important. It is actually very important. Mm-hmm. And she has a really good approach about how to look at profit and what that allows us to do mm-hmm. with, you know, the hygiene department. If you want new instruments or whatever, you need to be profitable. So I'll let her just talk more about this stuff. It's really amazing. You guys are gonna really love this episode with Rachel Teal Wall.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine. All right, back at Voices of Dentistry. But we have our guest host, Trisha O'Hare.
Happy to be here.
And this is her third time
on the podcast. This is
amazing. We've had a lot of repeat guests now. It's fantastic. But now you're not going to be the interviewee. The interviewer.
Ooh, I'm excited.
That's going to be great. It'll be wonderful.
And we have a new friend on the podcast, Rachel Wall.
Hi.
Hi,
Rachel. Happy to join. This is fun.
Yes. So tell us, I feel like I've known your name and known of you for a while.
Okay.
But if anyone's living under a rock, who are you?
Who am I? I'm a hygienist, first and foremost. I've been a hygienist for over 25 years. And back in, probably 1999 or 2000, I was introduced to this lady that I'm looking across the hall at here at Voices of Dentistry, Vicki McManus, one of my early mentors. And I had been introduced to the concept of hygiene coaching, and she took a chance and she hired me when she had started a hygiene coaching group. And, you know, one thing led to another. She moved on to some different things, and so did I, and then I started Inspired Hygiene. And that really is the core of Inspired Hygiene, is really helping practices to elevate their hygiene department from the standpoint of the level of engagement that the hygienists have in their own career
mm-hmm.
and in the practice, to what systems do they have in place, what are their beliefs about the work that they do and how they can affect their patients, all the way to, you know, the final kind of end product being profitability for the practice. So that's really our core product, is what we do is in-person coaching with dental teams. Yeah. We love it.
Did I hear that profitability was mentioned last on that on that list of
and
things?
And not first on there.
I mean, obviously that's
it is important.
Very
important. You
gotta
get paid.
If you're in a business, you don't get paid.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
There's so many other things that could lead up to that.
Well, what we were just talking about over there with millennial dentists was that a lot of times as hygienists, if you approach me with the profitability side, I shut down. Like, I'm way too emotional.
Uh-huh.
I don't want you to say, like, we're not making enough money, you're not producing enough. Like, I want to hear, like, all I hear is that you want me to work harder and my patients aren't going to get as healthy. Like, that's kind of what I hear. But if you tell me, hey, your patient's, like, bleeding a lot, should we start doing more periodontal?
Right.
Like, what could
that's
help
where
them
we
be
start.
Healthier?
Yeah.
That strikes a chord with my heartstrings to get the patient healthier and improved and taking care of them. And it's not business. It's not money. It's not numbers. It's not the side that I hate of dentistry. It's the...
But let me give you a little different perspective on that, because I caught on to that when I was in here watching the pod or listening and watching to the podcast you did on teledentistry.
Yeah.
And you said, you know, and it is a business, unfortunately. But here's the thing. So maybe if we look at a different spin on it is,
please,
because this is our livelihood, we have some certain sense of motivation, right? So when we look at, and most of us have been fortunate, I would think, in this room, really and truly, to be able to do some type of mission dentistry, mm-hmm. right? And on varying levels, whether it's, you know, I've done some local missions. I think you've been abroad and done some mission dentistry and things like that. But most of us can't do that every day, all day long.
No.
And so there's some internal motivation, something that drives us, that we need to have gainful employment. We need to have a career that fulfills us. And so maybe if we look at the business piece of, hey, look, if our practice is profitable, then, and we're working with a dentist who really believes in his or her team, then what that's going to provide us is we're going to be able to invest in 3D printing. We're going to be able to invest in high quality materials so our patients are getting this best treatment, instead of having to like dig through the drawer and find the instruments that are
not
the least worn out.
The dullest,
right?
All the dull instruments.
Right.
Yeah.
So it is also a vehicle, that profitability is also a vehicle for us to feel like we are being fairly rewarded in our career, whether we are the dentist or the team member. And it's also a vehicle for us to be able to continue to up our game, or should be.
Right.
By going to things like this. Like, this is not free here at Voices of Dentistry. We all invested in this in ourselves, in our career. And to invest in things that are going to give better care for our patients.
Right. No, I think it's more of sometimes we're a product of our experiences, right? And if you were
Absolutely.
In a previous office where you were profitable, you still had the worst instruments, you still had processors, you still had, you know, the bottom of the barrel. I think that creates that pejorative understanding of business. You know, it makes it a pejorative word versus it being something where
positive
we all
thing.
Elevate ourselves. And I'm glad you point this out in me, because I'm always, Trish and I just had this conversation, like, I always want to be very self-aware. I want to use my words properly.
Yeah, me too.
And sometimes I don't even know that I say things like that, and that it comes from such a, I don't know, this deep,
I was going to say, it's coming from a deep place. And,
and
this is speaking of self-aware, I did a podcast over here earlier today, and I'm kind of rethinking everything that I said, but it's too late because it's out there. But I have been very fortunate, and I've been in an old school practice. That's really kind of the practice that I started in 1991, to a very progressive practice. And I've always had great relationships with the dentists that I've worked with, and I've never felt like I was being slighted, or I've never felt like I was not provided. Now, was it like, Rachel, order whatever you want? No.
No.
And there were things that I bought my own loops. You know, I invested in that. I believe in that. I believe that as hygienists, we've got to have some skin in the game.
I agree.
With our tools and with our own education, we can't rely on our employer to provide everything, because then it's like, I'm going to make this analogy. Yes, it is that. And then the other analogy, this is not, there's not a direct relationship, but it's like being in an abusive relationship. It's like if all of your livelihood depends on that other party, then you're kind of trapped.
Yeah.
And
that's
I don't think your dentist wants you to feel trapped. I think they want you to be happy in the practice, and I certainly don't want to be that way. So I haven't been in that situation that you have with that experience of where it was productive, but yet you didn't have the basics of what you need.
Right.
So, you know, I have to be a little more sympathetic to maybe some hygienists who feel that way
and
have had those experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that regard.
Well, and we've even had a review on the podcast that was not positive from a dentist because of some things that I've said towards dentists.
Yes.
And I would be the first to say that I am going to approach a dentist cautiously. I'm not going to make the assumption that they are going to be in it for the greater good of the patient care, because that's not what I've experienced. I mean, the thing I said on the podcast, I was told that I would be a better surgical assistant if I had three hands, bigger boobs, and no ovaries.
No way.
This is the life that I've lived. I've lived this good old boy game with them of, like, what do I need to get the... And so it's been a fight always. Like, how can I make the patient help? And then they're fighting me to make more money. Me fighting, like, I need the things to do what I need, you know?
And did you feel like you had to stay in that situation?
I left.
Okay.
I left.
So that's always our choice.
Yes.
And that was the other thing that came up. And I'd love to hear your take on this, Tricia, too, from kind of the West Coast perspective on this, because I'm in the East. And, you know, my thing is, well, if that's what's happening and you're not okay with it, then you have a choice to get out.
Yeah.
And that's not always an easy choice.
No.
And I have always been able to kind of make my way and, like, figure out the zigs and zags of whatever the market might be. But I've also not been in a market like, you know, some states where the market is saturated and flooded. And, you know, I was just talking with Carrie from Toronto, where, you know, they have this huge influx of hygienists, and we won't get into kind of how that happened, but it just drove salaries down.
Yeah.
To just a point that was, you know, it just changed the whole, like, landscape of that, you know, career path. So I know it's easier said than done sometimes, is my point. And I think if we're in a healthy environment, it should be profitable.
I totally agree.
Because, and also now, from my perspective as a business owner with team members of my own, like, I've been also able to see the other side of the coin. And if I'm carrying all the risk, and if bills don't get paid, it's coming on me.
Yeah.
And I have people that need to be paid, whether I get paid or not.
Right.
I can kind of feel the pain from the other side. I don't have, you know, $1.5 million facility debt that a dentist does. I don't have anything like that at all. But I can kind of
And I think this is a good conversation, because even though I've met amazing dentists and that have been supportive, I think sometimes that my deep-seated experiences do come to the surface more than they probably should. And in moments where saying business, or dentistry is a business, unfortunately, and not even realizing that's still a lingering emotion. So I think the self-awareness and having these conversations where people can say, do you even know that you just said that? Or, and we even have been in a moment where we're like, get frustrated with hygienists for not being educated. And then we have to remember that we're in a position where we're overly educated in a lot of things, and that we have to kind of go back to the days of, like, when we were in the trenches and not so filled with CE that, like,
right,
we're gonna burst, right? Just, I don't know. It's always a good reminder, I think.
I want to hear
I do too.
From Tricia.
It seems to me that there are a couple of problems. One is that we are told forever that we have a 2-year education, even though hygienists have the equivalent of a master's degree. And so sometimes hygienists have have no confidence and can't talk to the dentist in a way.
I see that all the time.
And when we do something to change that to boost their confidence and they take ownership of the hygiene department, they're not going to continue to do undercover perio and not charge for it. It's a lot of work to be treating 5-millimeter pockets that bleed without the proper instruments and the proper codes and the proper fees. The patients don't appreciate it, the dentist doesn't. But I think it comes from hygienists not having the confidence to own their own profession and own the hygiene department and have a conversation with the dentist to say, let's figure out what percentage of my production can go into the fund to buy instruments and equipment. Even if it's 5%, it's going to be a huge amount. But then both parties have skin in the game and they don't feel like they're going to the daddy boss always saying, please, may I have something, or I want. So that's my take. And I think that has an effect when hygienists feel trapped and they can't leave. Then they also lose their confidence. But if they take ownership and feel confident, they can make it work with just about any dentist because they are then a partner, not an employee.
Yeah, totally agree.
I don't feel like I've really ever had instances where friends of mine that are hygienists, I live in Washington State, felt trapped. I think that there are anecdotally some instances of very small towns, but if you're in a bigger city, it's kind of saturated, but if you have the skills, if you have the personality, if you don't have those, then work on them.
Right.
But put yourself out there. Yeah. You can find a job. My thoughts on that.
Well, and even just go out and buy some of your own instruments. Show the dentist that you are. It's important. They take you quite seriously when you've invested in their patients and their practice.
I believe that. However, I've worked in a lot of offices too where they didn't even know that I bought new instruments. Like, they wouldn't know.
You have to tell them.
Exactly. Like, unless I'm like throwing it out there and like, or making it rain with my instruments in front of them, like, I bought these. You know, like, they literally could care less about what I was doing in that moment in that chair. So my question for you with Inspired Hygiene, are you, and with your coaching, are those conversations you're having with the hygienist, like, to empower and have those conversations?
Yes. And so I cannot tell you how many times I and our coaches have one of the things that we all do when we go into the practice is we look at their instruments. So we assess the instruments, and we've been in perio practices that have...
They have really good handles, right? No blades, but good handles.
Yeah, ultrasonic instruments that, you know, literally 70% of... Yeah. There's no cutting, no working in at all.
At all.
And, like, the shank is gone. They've been using the shank. So... that's one of the things we look at, and we are very, the dentist hires us, that, you know, but we let them know, like, this is for your whole team, and if you're asking the hygienist to do this, to step up this level of performance, they have to have the right equipment to do the best job for the patient, just like you've got to have the right equipment to do your work. And they're like, yes, absolutely. I mean, if they've invested in having us come in and coach them, they're ready for that. And then we say, okay, let's make a list of what is needed, and you've got to have enough, because we believe very heavily on using ultrasonics as a primary scaling tool, and so you've got to have enough tips or inserts so you can turn them over and you can use them. And I can't tell you the number of times that the hygiene team has said, well, we can't really, we can't get new instruments. And then we'll ask the dentist privately, and they'll say, I've told them to order whatever they want.
Oh.
Like, I don't know where this is coming from.
I've heard that so many times.
So many times. And so it can, I think a few things happen. Sometimes there's a gatekeeper orderer in the office.
Good point. Yes.
And so it's important to have that conversation openly with the whole team so everybody knows. Sometimes it is a let's wait, and then all of a sudden we need $5,000 worth of instruments instead of setting a budget and saying let's order so many every month.
Right.
And then sometimes it's just maybe some offhand remark that the dentist never thought was taken that way, but then all of a sudden they feel like, okay, we can't order anything.
Yeah.
So it's just yeah, we help facilitate and open those lines of communication, and it's usually pretty easily resolved.
I always say that hygienists and dentists, that is a marriage. It's like you have terrible communication, somebody said something that was taken incorrectly, and now everyone's bitter about it. Like, it just creates...
Sometimes you just need to clear the air.
Yes, right?
But in your example of what you purchased, I think it would just be, you know, you come in, maybe the dentist is sitting in her office, and say, hey, just want to let you know, I purchased some instruments. I feel like what I've had is just, you know, it's been okay for a while. And I know maybe you're not in the position to do this now, but it's what I need to be able to do an efficient job.
So I went ahead and...
Yeah, and this is what I did, and I just wanted you to know.
I think that's a great conversation.
Nothing wrapped around it.
Do you feel, though, that it might be more productive to go in and say, hey, doctor,
look.
This is what I'm considering doing.
Yes.
Are you in a position where you can do this for me? And if not, then go ahead and take an issue.
I'm ready to make that.
I think having a conversation ahead of time is a great idea. I would give the dentist the option
of either me or you doing it. I would say, are you in a position of doing this, yes or no? Done.
Yeah.
And then make your own decision.
And make your decision afterwards.
Yes. I do believe that you need to inform them of your decision
after you've done that. You had a conversation 2 weeks ago. I understand. I'm not holding it against you, but I need these instruments for my job.
Yeah.
I brought in these instruments. Hope that's okay with you.
Yeah. How often do you see dentists complaining that their staff is not taking care of the instruments or care of the equipment?
So I just had a conversation with the two dentists about that. They have invested about $20,000 in new equipment on our recommendation, and the team has a history of things like hand pieces being lost. You know, a piezo tip is very easy to lose.
A whole hand piece.
And so I don't know. I haven't been able to really figure out, is this something that's happening regularly, or is this like it happened one time 3 years ago
and now we're still living it? Yeah.
So I'm still kind of unwinding that. But what they decided to do, because they have a rather large hygiene department, is they bought an autoclave just for hygiene instruments, because the hygienists felt like things were being taken and going to the surgical suites and all of that. But I'm not sure exactly how it was all going down. And so what we agreed was that if they're using piezo tips, that they need to be sterilized in a block, and they need to be kept in a block when they're not being used, because those are super easy to just accidentally throw away. A hand piece is a little bit harder. So yes, not that often though. That's an exception to the rule.
Yeah. Yeah. So I hear it a lot with the sensors and two-heads. I'm not going to lie. Right now, our graduating class, I think they've beat up our equipment more than any previous class
My fear was always destroying the sensor.
Yeah.
You know, rolling over
Or even just wiping them down. Like, I'm always like, should I need to hold it like here and not, you know, like it'd be that one day that I don't and then ruin it.
The sleeve off too aggressively and worry about that connection.
I can't help but think, though, that they're probably a little more durable than
they are. Well, I think now, maybe.
Now they have, like, Kevlar-coated wires and stuff like that, too. So,
But the reps also, when they came in to do the sensors, I mean, they put, like, the fear of God in them.
Right, yes. These are $10,000 sensors. Yeah. And, hey, if I was the dentist and I was buying that, I would want to make sure it was treated.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, how much pushback do you get from hygiene teams that are not willing to change?
So one of the questions we always ask when we're talking with doctors about coaching is, you know, how open is your team to learning and growing and doing new things? And they'll usually be very honest. They'll say, you know what, I've got, you know, one that's just always super gung-ho, one that's kind of in the middle, and one, I spoke to somebody last week, he said she's stuck in her ways. And I was like, okay, so what are you, you know, if you move forward with this, what are you willing to do? And usually they'll say, well, you know what, I think she will come around, and or we'll say, this could be a deal breaker. And so what we try to do is, A, begin the relationship before the coach shows up in the office, because unless they've had a lot of coaches or consultants in their practice before, it's normal to be nervous. You've got some outside person coming in and with some authority, and you don't really know exactly what they're going to do. So we have some phone calls. We do surveys, so we get the hygienists to tell us what they want to see improve. So when if they say, you know, I want to see the doctor come in for the exams, then, you know, quicker, then we can give them some ways to help their doctors get in there. So we kind of want to see what they want. We got to give them a little bit of what they want.
Yeah.
And then we know what the dentist wants. So we have the dentist communicate the objectives, not us.
Yeah.
And then we have conversations before, and then we always say in, like, one of the pre-calls is, okay, so this is the time to just tell us anything you are nervous about, you are concerned about, anything you're kind of anxious about. Like, we want to know that, because most of the time we can calm your nerves on that, and it's good to just get it all out on the table. And
right.
that's where they will say, well, you know, I'm nervous that when you come here, you're going to be standing over me with my patients, or I'm nervous that I'm going to have less time, or I'm nervous that you're just going to say that we need to recommend perio for everybody, and I don't think everybody needs it. And I'm like, great. Like, just bring it on, and let's talk about it. And then the next step is, when the coach is there, that they're always the first focusing on the why. Why is it even in the patient's best interest to change? And you got to get their heart ready to make the change before you talk to the head. And if you go in leading with production,
yeah,
you're lost.
Yeah.
So you have to hit the belief system first, and give them the opportunity to come along in their own time. And then if they're not, then that's when you start. Sometimes you have to have some more in-depth conversations of what's holding you back from this.
Good, because one of my questions was going to be, like, you see oftentimes on a lot of Facebook forums, a consulting company is coming in here, tell me all the good and bad, tell me everything. And I think that was exactly what I wanted to hear about that, because you hear so many negative
things. And I've been a hygienist on the receiving end of that, too. In good situations and not great situations. But most of the time it was good if you just, you know. And I mean, I worked with Chris Bowman for 8-9 years. I mean, things were always changing, and I had to check myself.
Yeah.
Even as I was a coach, like, okay, like, this is what you ask other people to do, so you better put your big girl panties on and get ready for some change, because it's coming.
So what do you have, any recommendations or words of wisdom for new grads or students that are about to come into this wonderful profession that we have?
Yeah, I would say just know that, you know, when we leave hygiene school, we just know just enough not to really hurt somebody. And that to just know that you will always be learning and growing and take way more CE than is required. And and don't be afraid to speak up, too. So if you're in a practice, you know, I think it takes a really strong, confident person, to your point, Tricia, to walk into a practice as a new grad that's been going on for 20 years and to not get sucked into just the flow of the way it's always been.
Yes.
So there's some of that assimilation. However, if you see things that aren't right, if you see something, say something. But you've got to approach it in a way of saying, hey, I see an opportunity for us here. And would you be willing to back me up in recommending maybe perio more frequently to some of our patients? Because I'm going to need your support, and here's what I'm thinking. And just kind of have those conversations kind of slowly.
Have something on that?
I was just going to think, you've talked about the perio. Do you also deal with the oral hygiene and the prevention and the coaching? And
yes, we do. And I would say, however, that's something that we could do more of. That we could focus more on that. And then the other piece that we focus on, obviously, is, you know, how are the hygienists supporting the dentists in recommending restorative and teeing that up and making those exams really easy? You know, someone talked about the decision fatigue this morning, that, you know, they used the example of the study that a judge was you know, right before lunch. In the morning, all of the decisions were more favorable to the
parolee.
Yeah, it was a parole judge. I'm not communicating this very well. And then at lunch, like, it was all negative. Like, there was all, no, you're going back to jail, you're going back to jail. And then they had a snack, and then everything was a little bit better. So dentists are the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, they're leaving a super intense procedure, and then they're coming in, and we can't expect them to have to start from scratch on the exam when we've been with this patient for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
We got to put the pieces of the, paint the picture for them. And a lot of times what happens is they make no decision. They're just say, we'll watch it next time, or you look fine, and you're thinking, oh my God, why didn't they say anything about...
I just had this conversation.
Why didn't they say anything about this? But we need to lead them to that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we always think the dentist can read our mind, and they can't. We hold it in and think they're going to know.
It's like a marriage.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
But to your point, I think that that is something that we probably could more fully flesh out in our trainings is the oral hygiene piece. And we do talk a lot about adjuncts, and whether that is oral hygiene adjuncts or treatment adjuncts or things like that. Yeah.
Nice. So if somebody wants to get in touch with you, is Inspired Hygiene... they're calling us back
in. It's getting loud.
It's actually a good time for that.
Yeah.
Inspired Hygiene, is that, so that's coaching. Is there anywhere that they can reach out to you for advice, or maybe not so much because it's kind of in the coaching thing?
Well, I mean, you know, certainly, you know, reach out on Facebook if anybody has a question.
Yeah.
You can find me, Rachel Wall. You can look at our Inspired Hygiene page.
Drive you crazy, but...
And any of the forums, too, if they want to call me out, you know, and say, tag me and say, you know, Rachel Wall, what do you think about this?
Oh, my God.
I can't promise. That should have been a disclaimer. I can't promise I'm going to see everything. But,
anytime Daniel Lopez tags me into something, I'm like, do I want to engage?
Don't even look.
Do I want to engage in this? It's going to be the next 12 hours of my life in an argument. Or...
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have any desire to argue, but I'm always happy to just give a little tip or something like that.
No, that's good.
Can I jump in with one more question? It's probably mostly dentists who hire you, but do you ever have hygiene teams come to you and say, "We want you"?
Yes,
Too.
Super. Not as often as I would like, but actually, I just talked to a dentist the other day that saw Jamie, one of our coaches, speak. And we've had that happen with all of our coaches, and then they told the dentist, and it's a timing thing, right? So maybe they've talked about it, maybe they've had some team meetings about hygiene, and then they went to see one of us speak. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, we're ready for this.
Yeah.
And they see you as a real person then, and connect, and they're like, okay, so this person's not going to come in and, you know, really...
Well, isn't
like,
that kind of like the same thing as like our patients when they come in asking for help versus us trying to give it to them and they're not ready?
Yeah, it's the same
thing, right?
Right. I met a gentleman here actually whose office manager has seen us speak at ADON. And so they're coming to see me speak at midwinter. So, yes, that does happen. And we love it when that happens because then they're ready and they're open and they just, you know, need to get their dentist on the phone with us and they can be on the phone too. And we're always happy to chat that way, you know, and see how we might be able to help. And you know, for those kinds of things, they can email me at rachel@inspiredhygiene.com.
Okay. Yeah. And then website?
inspiredhygiene.com.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
For taking
this
time.
I enjoyed it.
This was so fun.
Fun to ask questions of Rachel Wall. Thank you.
We appreciate them.
Yeah.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
It's about that time. Grab your blanket and a glass of wine. It's story time with Michelle.
Okay, for story time with Michelle. Because we had the wonderful Trish O'Hare as our guest co-host, I thought I would pull out my little Perio Reports book that she sent me a few months back by her and Jean Suvan. It's Compendium of Current Research. It's like 400 and something pages. Do you see this book?
Holy moly.
Do you see
awesome.
That I've tabbed it? Because I've actually read this because
such
I am
a dork.
I truly am. You have no idea, buddy. I'm not kidding. I think I read this while I was at the beach. I like think I was like laying out, like watching people surf and reading this giant nerdy book.
That's with kind of area the, that's, research. That's when you should be reading that kind of book, though. Honestly, I'm down with that. I could,
but normally you see people reading like fiction and like good novels, and I'm just like, here's a textbook. Look at me. All right. So one of the things that I had marked on here was disease control and perio health, and essentially these are reports that do have things cited. And since we don't have all day and all night to go through story time with Michelle, I'm just going to give you just a one or two, maybe three, we'll see. But the first one is OHI as it relates to periodontal health. This was volume 6, number 4. Is there a correlation between the time spent on oral hygiene instruction and oral health? A study was carried out in a private school in Brazil to test this idea. A group of 185 students, all aged 13 at the start of the study, were divided into three groups. Comprehensive instructions involving 3.5 hours per student, conventional oral hygiene instructions involving 1.5 hours per student, and a control group which did not receive any instruction. The group receiving comprehensive instruction had several individual sessions over the first few months of the study. Individualized instruction was given, and the home use of the disclosing solution was encouraged. The conventional instruction group received standard demonstration, but no supervised instruction actually using the brush and floss in the mouth. Every month, the comprehensive instruction group received a new toothbrush, dental tape, toothpaste, and the control group received only toothpaste. Data was collected yearly for 3 years. During the first year, all study participants showed an increase in plaque levels. Over the next 2 years, plaque levels dropped below baseline scores. The group receiving comprehensive oral hygiene instruction had 10% fewer plaque sites than the two groups which had scores within a tenth of the point of each other. Bleeding scores were also similar for the control and conventional oral hygiene group, which the comprehensive group scoring 7% lower. Girls showed more improvement than boys, and children with higher scores at the start of the study showed less favorable results. Overall, lingual surfaces had more plaque than facial surfaces. The improvement seen in the control group was accounted for by what the researchers termed the contamination effect, or of the positive attitude of their schoolmates. This is also an example of the Hawthorne effect, where study participants show improvement simply as a result of participating in the study. Although the comprehensive instruction group showed slightly more improvement, it was surprised to see that the control group and the conventional instruction group showed the same improvement. The one remaining question is what will happen to the oral hygiene levels now that the study has been completed. And this is from a 1994 study that was published in the Journal of Periodontology. She follows that up with role of supergingival plaque, volume 5, number 4. Patient plaque control and professional debridement? I always say it wrong.
Debridement. You can say it however you want to say it.
How did I say it first?
You said debridement first, then you changed it to debridement, and then to debridement.
Because I second-guessed myself. Debridement therapy are the fundamentals of both preventive and therapeutic periodontal treatment. Is one more important than the other? Questions have been raised concerning the effectiveness of one without the other, as well as the effects of one upon the other. Based on the research reported in 1977 by Nyman and his colleagues, we know that surgery without benefit of either patient plaque control or maintenance therapy resulted in more rapid bone loss and loss of attachment than untreated disease. Studies can be found supporting and refuting both sides of the issue. Researchers have reported that supergingival plaque control without subgingival instrumentation can improve periodontal health. Others claim that subgingival instrumentation in the absence of adequate home care by the patient is sufficient to control periodontal inflammation. Research does substantiate the influence of supergingival plaque on the formation of subgingival plaque. So plaque control without instrumentation is suggested as a possible means of controlling periodontal disease in countries of the world where professional dental hygiene services are unavailable. Studies measuring gingivitis and shallow pocketing have documented significant improvement resulting from control of supergingival plaque without subgingival debridement. This may be viable alternative to dental hygiene debridement therapy in third world countries. Although prevention hasn't been as popular as it was in the early 70s, it is clear that the patient plaque control is significant and warrants further research. I agree, Tricia. And that was from 1993 Journal of Clinical Periodontology, The Role of Supergingival Plaque in the Control of Progressive Periodontal Disease. And what I do think is happening in our profession, again, talking about the ethics side of things, is that, you know, we got a lot of research on products, right? Like as far as chlorhexidine or implants or laser therapy, but we don't have a whole lot going back to good old plaque control and how we can help facilitate OHI for our patients. So I would encourage that, honestly. Like I think that should be the biggest part of your appointment. Like I would leave stain on people's teeth and just to have more time to do OHI personally.
And honestly, I've done similar things like that before where it's like, look, we're going to reappoint this whole entire thing. You know, the new patient exam is kind of where my brain is right now. It's like, could I scale all of the calculus off? Probably in this last 25 minutes that we have. But instead, let me talk to you for 15 minutes about this because it's really that important, because obviously you've demonstrated throughout your life that this isn't a priority. So let's have the conversation about why, you know, the whole motivational interviewing thing, which was a great interview also. By the way, I feel really strong about that kind of stuff because it's necessary. It's the foundation. Absolutely. It's the beginning of everything. So,
yep. So if you want to check out any of those, it's the Perio Reports Compendium of Current Research with that Trish O'Hare and Jean Suvan put together. It's just all the years of them doing those Perio reports for everybody, which is so cool to read it. Cause it's all like, put together, like, you know, maybe this topic is refractory periodontitis. And then original, like, you know, early onset periodontitis. And it looks at all the research reports that they had done on those topics. So super cool. If you're a nerd,
super cool.
So,
or a hygienist.
I'd say, everyone, we hope you have a great week, and don't forget to rate us on iTunes or, I think you can do that on Stitcher and all those fun things. We appreciate that. That's how people find our podcast. The more reviews we have, the better they can find us. And send us a Facebook message. Thanks for interacting on the Facebook page. We appreciate that. We'll just keep it going. And if you have any questions, you can email us at atale2hygienist@gmail.com or send us a message in the Facebook Messenger. Is that all? I think that's all.
I think that's it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And we hope you enjoyed this week's episode, because we did.
We did. All right. Talk to you later, guys.
Bye, y'all.